take internal fractions of a router if it was cutting back to a sprint?
Sure. The $10,000 par, or the 12.5 par at Hollywood Park is 22.45.11.10.3. The route par is one. Let's just use final time for a minute as the illustration. What was the route par internally? It was 111.3, wasn't it? Okay. So if the horse routes in 110.4, if his internal fraction is 110.4, is that a good performance? Yeah. It's an excellent performance. And that's the kind of horse you want in a sprint. If the horse routed in 112, why bother to put him into a sprint? That's the kind of insights, that's the kind of judgments you make automatically when you understand these relationships. You can look at it and say, this horse just routed in 110.1 to the second call before he faded. I love him in a sprint. Providing the first or the second call in the sprint or the first call in the route match up pretty well. Because if he goes 46.110.1, he also did very well too. He just went 24.1. Okay, those are the kinds of relationships you make once you get a hold of these one of these pars for each racetrack, then you can make a lot of judgments. You can tell whether or not a horse exceeded the turn time requirements, the first fraction requirements, all of these things. Those are judgments you can make automatically. It just becomes a knee-jerk reaction. You just say, that's it, that's what I'm gonna do. This is the way it is. It's a good horse, it's a bad horse. Yes.
On these two distances here for your sprint, you have a 45 and 1 par, and on the route you have a 46 and 3.
Right.
If you use the sprint, the route to sprint procedure, you'd map this 46 and 3 to a 46 and 1. Wouldn't it be better to go by these numbers and knock off that whole second or a little more than a second?
You can. Do it. And if it doesn't work for you.
If you have the actual pars to work with.
Just be careful when you drop these routers back into a sprint, because it is a even though we do it successfully, we do it very carefully, because it's kind of a universal fact that routers that shorten up do not do well, except when they do, and it's up to us to figure out when that exception is. And that's a horse that routes in 45.4, for example, when the par was 46.2 to the half mile. That kind shortens up. Yes.
The racing form switching their procedure making varies. You can have days when they may have only one route, and whatever the horse ran, that's going to be the variance. So, like if they ran this 44.2 par at Santa Anita, that's like a
20. Same problem with her. It's kind of,
okay. Yeah. Now, see, Elliot Sidewater asked me earlier what I thought of the new daily racing form variant approach, and since I use my own numbers, my own variants and everything, I really hadn't thought it through. At first, I thought, well, that's a great idea. But then he presented the same thing you did. Now, what happens if you only have one route or one sprint? Now it's all badly distorted. They were better off when they did it before.
Well, if it adds up to 100, then you're a little leery of it.
Yeah. That's right. Be leery of it if it says 100. That's right. Okay. Any other questions on this before we go on?
Can you just mention, like, when we have a performance, let's just say that we have a hockey continuously runs route races, and we get a sprint race today, and we learned the way in the past of taking like four ticks off here, two ticks off here.
Right.
Does that still hold? Do you use that yourself or what?
Do I use that myself? Yeah, I do. I do still use that, but it's uncommon, because most of the time, if a horse has been routing, like in your example, continuously routing, their speed's going to be so dull that when they get into a sprint, they're not going to sprint well anyway. It's the ones that have been sprinting, move into a route, and then move back into a sprint that are usually better for this. And I will use that approach, but unfortunately, if you use it, the only accurate figure you wind up with might be factor W, because that early fraction is distorted. Now, if somebody over here asked me, well, then would you take off four or five lengths from that early fraction to coincide with your par? And that's a good idea to do, at least mentally. Because if the horse exceeded the par for the half mile in the route by any appreciable amount, you can kind of assume that he's going to sprint very well. But it's got to be a mental adjustment. I would use the traditional two lengths off the final time and two lengths off the second call and create your own first call for that number.
I talked to a trainer about this, and he did say, beware. The difference between sprints and routes is many times in the first 100 yards.
That's right.
The sprinters come out of there, bang, and that's how they're trained, and that's how they're bred. That's why they're sprinters.
That's what buzzers are for.
Yeah. The routers are used to coming out a little slower, and all of a router that can run, let's say, a legitimate 45. He ran a 45.2, he's cutting back to 45, they expect a 45. He comes out, he's in with a bunch of 45-second sprinters, but he looks around, and they're leaving him behind, and he digs in, and he uses his energy in that first 100 yards, and he just doesn't have left later on. It goes back to deceleration as much as acceleration. All races after about the first 1.5 furlongs or so are decelerating. The sprinters tend to reach that top speed sooner and start to decelerate sooner. And it can really throw you off. Good sprinters need a whole different, they're using different parts of the muscle, everything. So don't necessarily think that just because you can match it up on racing form, that it's going to work. The sprinter route, a route to sprint cutback, really does work, but a dedicated router just doesn't have that much fast twitch muscle. You want to get technical about it. And he may not make. Not because he can't run a 45, but he can't run a 45 while trying to keep up with these incredible speedballs around him. Who are going to not, they're going to run a 45 too, but they're going to do it against a 21-4 in the first one. He wants to do it against a 22-2 in the first stretch. And by trying to keep up, he's dead. And if he can run his own race, he now has 11 horses to pass. And that takes more out of it.
Yes?
Just a clarification from Dick. You were talking about the adjustments from the sprint route in the Henderson. It still requires them? It still requires
now,
them?
No, not on the automatic.
No, I'm not automatic.
No, the automatic is automatic. You just, it goes. We're talking about the phase three part of synergism, which is, if you're doing this kind of, if you're doing the automatic, turn your brain off. You don't need all this stuff. The only thing you need is a clearance adjustment. And we're using fewer and fewer of those. If you're doing non-automatic side, and since we're looking at cars and all that stuff, I was assuming non-automatic. Yeah. I'm sorry, I should have made that clear. The automatic does it all. It does an energy adjustment for everything. Very similar to a Meridian in one stage, very similar to, I don't know what to call it, similar to. Very similar to adjusting everyone to an 80 variant if they're not shippers.
Yeah.
And then it does some other tricky things in there that I actually haven't wanted to disclose to find out. And it comes out the end.
Yeah. The value here, though, is that if you're using the automatic, the value is that you recognized that the horse is coming from a good performance, a mediocre performance, or a poor one before the computer makes all the adjustments and takes it out of your hands.
The automatic is more demanding of the pre-processing unit.
Right.
Lives up here. If you've got accurate variance, and I've used Tom's variance for a lot of years in Southern California, they're a safety net. If you want to put in horses with a shovel, put in 9 horses and just use any pace line, his variance will carry you through more successfully than any of the automatic programs because they're reality-based. And you can get away with putting a slow horse in because it'll just come up 99999 across the bottom. Synergism won't do that. You put a slow horse in the synergism and it thinks, hey, there's a reason. It's got to. Otherwise, it would never get a slow horse. It would just be running wrong.
Yes.
So, in other words, whether you use the automatic, the synergism too, or the adjustment, the way you arrive at that conclusion is that you can have to run the race two ways for a few times to see, well, you know, what the differences are between the automatic adjustment and the hand adjustment.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I very seldom ever, even when I'm in Las Vegas, use the automatic adjustment. Almost never do I do that. So I'm dependent upon this kind of analysis. Because I just don't trust it. I would rather do it myself. Now, we've got a lot of people we have a mixture in this audience. Some people are using phase three to start with, so they're going to have to make this kind of adjustment, period. Some people are using synergism. And even within the synergism group, some people prefer to use the synergism without the automatic adjustment, because there are some nice whistles and bells to that program. And some people prefer to use it with. But either way, you should understand what represents good and bad performances at each of these racetracks. And it's easy to get. Now, is this clear enough that you can do this? Because it's really valuable in having done that. I mean, if you play in Chicago, you want to know what a good performance is at Balmoral. You want to know what a Hawthorne. You want to know Churchill Downs horses that ship in and out of those places. And that's easy to find out. All you need is a couple of days worth of racing forms, really. Just a few races that you can find a number of past performance lines. Elliot.
Yeah, to answer his question, because I've already done it, and maybe I can save you a little bit of time. I've run the same races through phase three. I make my own variant with time. And then run the same races through synergism. The horses tend to come up in the same order, but the gaps between them are different. That's what I found.
Me too. They tend to duplicate each other to an extent, but there are a lot more ties when you use an automatic adjustment, and you don't get a good feel for, say, the three dominant horses or two dominant horses in a race because everybody's so close. You say, well, I'd kind of like to bet here. I'll make my second choice here. If you're using true variance or true performances, you look at it and say, these four horses have no chance. These two tower above the rest of them. That's the value of doing that.
That's a good point, Elliot. Thank you.
This brings up another point. There's a little bit of conflict in you always want to put in the five contenders, or if you see you've gotten a race where there's only two or three dominant ones, is it going to skew the sampling and give you a false reading by putting in five and there's only two or three?
Okay. See, what happens
is that over time that has kind of grown out of context. When we're talking about modeling, and Dick's going to get into that in a little while, when we talk about modeling, for purposes of creating an accurate model of the racetrack, you want to use races in which you had about four or five contenders, because it doesn't mean a lot if you put three contenders in and your number three early pace horse wins. It's just your slowest early horse, right? And in a relationship of 12 horses in a field, a number three early in your base might really be the number eight early if you were to look at the entire field. On the other hand, you don't want to force fit those horses into your program. If you have three contenders, run it onto three contenders, then just don't use that race in modeling purposes.
Okay.
There's another approach that I have used. You have a button on your computer, asterisk. Put it in front of your non-contenders' names and throw in two others.
Yeah. If you want five.
If one of those horses comes up, a 1-2-1, you still do not bet it, though. Mm-hmm. You've already made that decision. That he's not a contender for whatever reason, class deficiency, layoff, whatever. But you can put him in just to keep the model on it. But it's just you have to handicap as if those two lines were not there. I draw a red line through them afterwards. But they exist just simply for modeling purposes only.
Yes.
Yeah, what do you use for your own variants? What system do you use?
To make my own variants?
Yes.
Well, kind of a mixture of traditional Bayer, Quirin, approaches and some of the insights that I've gained over the years.
3 minutes and go through the whole process.
Yeah, there'll be two full chapters in my book on that, incidentally. So, I mean, it's not something I can cover in here. Yeah.
I'll let you go next year.
Okay, you'll have to, yeah. Yes.
I've seen him spend a day at it, and people still were saying, it's not easy.
Well, James Quinn, he just did a class recently, and he said he told everybody he only knew a few people in the United States that went back over the variants to adjust them and revise them based on subsequent performances, Bayer being one, and I think Scott McManus being the other. And I do that. I go back into my base, and I'll get a couple of races that don't track. I'll go back and adjust that, and that will lead to more adjustments, and I'll go back and I'll update my base so that they continue to be accurate over time. And I do that occasionally, and I change the variants, and I write to my clients that there will be some changes in this month's variants, you know. And I just got one from a guy that says, if you're going to make that many mistakes, I'm going to throw these in the trash where they belong. And I must have spent 8 full hours doing that, right in the middle of trying to write this damn book. And so I wrote him a letter back, and I said, apparently you haven't been paying attention. No, I've been doing this all the time, but because there are more than usual is why I wrote that. And this and that, I'm really disappointed in your attitude, and I'll give you your money back for Del Mar if you want. So the letter comes back from him then says, I'd really like the part-time charge for Del Mar. That was it. Anyway.
What is the latest on the open adjustment for synergism? Class to class and track to track, what is the latest that's been being used? Like, is it 0.1 for a class and 0.15 for a track?
Oh, you mean for the difference in track class and pure class, right?
On automatic, Purdy says he's almost stopped making class adjustments from class to class. If a course is a contender, he's a contender. If he's not a contender, he doesn't belong in there. With an automatic program, that's the right approach. If it's a 12-5 race and you've got a $30,000 horse, for some reason you think he's a contender, he has to run with that. If you've got a $3,000 horse and you think he's a contender, you don't give him a class adjustment. You make that class adjustment by eliminating the horses that are non-contenders.
Track-to-track, you still have to figure it out. 115
or something like that?
You have to figure it out. If you want a guesstimate, that's a good place to start, 0.15. It is not accurate.
Yeah, let me tell you how you do that, though. These two parts that we developed for Sanity and Hollywood Park, you run one through synergism, and you run the other through synergism. And the difference between their factor W's is the number that you can use successfully in track-to-track. Now, it happens to be Hollywood and Santa Anita. There's no track-to-track. But assuming that one might have been a lower track class, the difference in the factor W's takes care of the track class. Because if you make the horse a contender, if you say the horse can win, all you want is the basic difference between those two tracks. You don't want a class adjustment, because the minute you put the class adjustment, now you're saying this horse really can't win.
Remember, that does not apply to stage three, because there you might want a class adjustment using meridian variant.
Definitely. A meridian variant, you have to. Because otherwise, when you make it, you're saying you can take two, in a meridian variant, you take a $32,000 race and a $3,000 race, and when you adjust them by the meridian variant, you're saying they're the same. And of course they're not.
I met a fellow from Calder, as Sarah told me recently. He doesn't do any adjusting at all at Calder, and they felt like a bandit.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't believe it.
That's what Purdy's saying. Let's move on. I hope you can do this. If you can't, I'm willing to spend a little extra time. I didn't see any hands when I asked the question earlier. Let's move on, staying within that same race that we were looking at, page 37, and talk about the identification of running styles, ESP. Now, it's exceedingly important in pace analysis that you identify the style of the horses you're looking at. That race that we looked at last night that Andrew Beyer had used for his article is dependent entirely upon the running styles of those horses he used in the example. And the way I gave the example to him, I said the first horse is an early pace only horse, the second one's an early pace only horse, and the third one's a presser. Now, without that information, or if it's inaccurately called, that race turns upside down, because that first horse, horse A, that we looked at, if he were able to press as well as run early, is a certain winner. Because he'll just kind of sit off horse B and then take him because he's got the same capabilities to the first and second fractions. So it's very important that you identify how these horses run in races that they can run very well and win. Now, races that they don't win kind of can often contradict your running style. In other words, if you have a horse that runs fairly close and finishes fairly close, but wins only wire to wire, that is an early pace horse. It's not a presser, because he doesn't get the job done as a presser. He just runs along behind. And we're going to take a look now at page 37, and together we're going to identify these running styles as closely as we possibly can, because the entire pace analysis is based on relegating early pace horses that can't keep up early to mid-pack types. In other words, if you have four early pace horses and only one's capable of getting the lead velocity-wise, and if the other three are all dedicated earlies, they then become non-contenders. Everybody follow that? Look at Jazz Island. And with Jazz Island, we have roughly 10 races in which to look at his running style. And what is Jazz Island, folks? Label him early. Now, two races back, he managed to sit a length behind a horse in a mud race, but he still didn't quite get the job done. But all of the data on Jazz Island suggests that he's an early pace horse. Does anybody have any problem with this one? You should not. What about Dalim? He's a slug. The only way you could designate him is as a sustained horse, but I always slash that with an NF, meaning no form, because I don't want him as part of my pace analysis, because even if I can perceive that the entire pace of the race falls apart, Darlene would not be the horse that I bet to pick it all up. What is Ancient Blue? He is completely sustained, and he would be a candidate in a race that the pace fell apart to pick it up. Now, the ideal candidate, what would be, based on your understanding, because some of you have been around with us for a while, some of you are brand new, but based on your understanding of racing, your visualization skills, what would be the ideal running style day in, day out?
Presser.
And why? He's not, that's right. The presser is not subject to horses falling completely apart in front of him like closers are. He's also not subject to being involved in pace duels.
He's always there. Now, if a horse gets away in front of him, he's still going to run up to be second because he's not dependent on what that horse did. No, he would not be in a sustained presser. He's sustained.
So the presser would avoid traffic.
Yeah, a presser avoids traffic, but a presser isn't at the mercy of the pace that's generated up front early. See, a presser just kind of sits behind that pace a little bit. Now, he can be beaten by some horse getting away on an easy lead. Okay, but more often than not, he's able to keep them in his sights, in other words. Where a closer, if they don't run early, a couple of horses go out, and one horse takes the lead, another one sits behind him, that closer's in deep trouble because no one's going to be weak when they come into the stretch. That's why closers are such bad bets overall. It's not always. But overall, they very seldom generate high winning percentages. Yes, oh, yeah.
I think another clue that this ancient blue is sustained, not that there was ever any question, but even if the stretch coil in the race does well, he hasn't got the lead until the finish. He hasn't got the lead at the stretch call.
Good point. Horses that can't get to the lead at the stretch call are horrible plays overall. I mean, if you can find a race that you have five early pace types, and all of them are accurately identified as five early pace types, means none of them can press either, right? If you've done your work. In that kind of a race, unless one of them is so much quicker velocity-wise than the other four, they're all subject to losing the race. And then horses like Ancient Blue, in the last eighth of a mile, can come from well out of it to win, and those are the kinds of places you want. In fact, that's what we're doing. That's what pace analysis is all about. What about Tricky Lad? A sustained presser? Okay, basically he's a sustained horse, but for whatever reason he happened to show enough speed two races back to suggest that he might also be a presser type. But if I had to go to the bank with this horse, I'd say he's a sustained horse. Yes?
Could you kind of review numeric link factors that might describe early presence, presence, sustained presence?
No, I can't. And let me tell you what I will do, though. Rather than lengths back, I look at position in a field. And if you look at Tricky Lad, the reason I say if I had to go to the bank on this horse, it would be as a sustained horse. Go to his bottom line. Now, these are sprints, the first few. He's 12 of 12. Everybody know that there were 12 horses in that field? Everybody can read charts and past performances all the way through, right? If you can't, just raise your hand and we'll take care of that. In the next start, he's 11th of 12 at the quarter. In his next start, he's 5th of 10. And there's every once in a while, he shows a little bit of speed. But then look at his next start. He's 9th of 9. On October 7th, he's 9th of 10. And now he's routing. And it didn't change his running style one bit. On the 22nd of October, he goes back into a sprint. He's 10th of 12. November 2nd, he's 11th of 11. Now I can explain this race on January 25th. January 4th, he's 8th of 12 in a sprint. And the reason he was close up on January 25th is that he had been sprinting. And that will often happen. But then, on February 24th, guess what? He was 8th of 12 and had reverted back to his normal running style. Now, that is a sustained horse, regardless of where the lengths were. So I can't do it by lengths, but the way to do it is by running style. Here's a plus to that. First of all, running style does dictate. A horse that can go faster than your field, velocity-wise, and you look at him and say, he's my number one early pace horse, the race will often develop that he doesn't go out and go into the lead, because that's not his running style. But by virtue of being your number one early pace horse, that means he's just got a hell of a lot of reserve energy, that when they do hit the second call, he's fully capable of accelerating, yeah. But that doesn't mean he's going to take the lead, because if that is not his running characteristic, regardless of what your computer shows, and it's going to show an inaccuracy in this race. That's why you can't get too dependent upon these computers. Because when we go to this readout here in a moment, you'll see what I mean. It's never dull. Boy, it isn't, is it?